Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Anne Baldwin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Connection. On behalf of myself, Anne Baldwin, and Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, who is CEO of The Connection, it's great to have you along on this Sunday morning.
Good morning, Anne. You look so beautiful tonight with your bright blue eyes and your blue shirt.
Thanks.
Ready to roll.
You know, it's funny. When I worked in news, I had a news director once who said, blue's your color, and I want you to wear blue. So blue might be my color, but everything that I owned at that time had to be blue. So I had to wear blue all the time. So I'm surprised I'm not sick of it yet, but thank you for the compliment.
Well, you look gorgeous on this beautiful Sunday morning.
Yes,
so welcome. We have a very exciting show today.
We do. We've got Charles Barber in the house. Charles is the director of the Connection Institute for Innovative Practice. And I'll start with the big question. What is that?
It's... We decided about 5 years ago that the connection was big enough that there were enough of our staff involved in research that we could credibly partner with universities and do our own research, all with the view of improving our practices. So I've been involved in social services for longer than I'd like to say. And I can say in the 90s, you could get by with running a program with good stories, you know, good anecdotes, you know, and every program, no matter whether it's good or bad, would have 2 or 3 star clients, and you could say, you know, they saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened for, you know, it's a great thing in the last, particularly the last 10 years, is to get funding and to do good work, you have to prove that you're doing good work, and you have to get the data, and you have to track the data.
What a concept.
What a concept. And it happened in mental health. You know, as you know, the connection is multi-purpose. It happened in mental health about 10 to 15 years ago, where mental health became, and psychiatry became, very research savvy. It's only more recently in criminal justice. So we decided for our own clients' benefit, first and foremost, to find out what works and what doesn't work, and then create a feedback loop between research and practice, find out what works, and then change our programs accordingly. And also for our funders, to show them what was working, what was not working, with a view for them, you know, to fund what was working. And it's turned out, lo and behold, when we can prove really good outcomes, and I'm happy to talk about those specifically, we tend to get the grant applications that we apply for.
So Lisa, as CEO, it's kind of like my business, public relations. People want to know, well, what am I going to get for my money?
Mm-hmm.
Show me the results, show me the money. And some things are harder to measure than other things, but it really is important. And, you know, to this point that Charles brought up, people want to see results. I mean, it's got to be difficult, though, to be able to measure that, is it not?
No, I think for us it isn't, actually. I feel like we're very much ahead of the curve, Charlie. Do you agree? In
yeah.
collecting data and really connecting it to research. And we're, you know, right now we're looking towards, you know, what are our strategic goals, and we're working on this project right now as we move forward for a new day at the agency. And, you know, research and data is really up there, and really grateful for Charlie. He's brilliant, and he also, you know, this is his heart and soul in doing this work and really bringing the connection and its results, you know, to the forefront, and that's what we need to be doing. I think that we've been doing it for so long. We have so much data we haven't even utilized yet, right, Charlie? So I think we're like hitting the ground running right now with some pretty amazing things that are going to come out. And, you know, Charlie, I don't know if you want to talk about the reach up, for example, where I know we are going to talk about that today, but so just the recent data results that you showed me for our program. And we do that for a variety of reasons. I think the reason why we do that is because the work, first of all, the treatment is working. And I've said this to you before, Anne, you know, any one of us at the agency can tell you how great the organization is and how great the programs are. But the bottom line is that we have the results to show that, in fact, it is, and how it's affecting the state, and how clients are not getting, you know, the recidivism rates are extremely low in our criminal justice. Right? And people are not going back into the system. And that goes with really all of our service areas. The majority, you know, even with our family support services, you know, those children that are, you know, their moms are getting healthy and clean and, you know, not using anymore, those kids are not going back. You know, they're closing their cases in DCF. So that's why we have the research.
So let me ask you this, Charles. So what is the association, and how do you team up with universities? Do you utilize students? Do you utilize their programs? How does that work?
Well, it's very, very specific stuff. So one thing that we did that I'm quite positive that no social service agency in the country has is we applied through the federal government for what's called an IRB, an Institutional Review Board, which is a mechanism to make sure that human participants in research are protected. And so we have our own capacity to review the ethics of the research that we do. That's actually only for our own research. For other entities that do research, which is many Connecticut universities, they have their own IRBs, and so we work with them for their approval. But very specifically, things that we have going on right now, a criminologist at Central Connecticut is actually taking his sabbatical this fall. He's going to be in residence in one of our programs, and he's going to be examining an instrument, an assessment instrument for our criminal justice clients, basically talking to the clients to see if it's something that's useful and effective for them. And he'll publish articles about that. He actually did that 5 years ago. He created a new and validated instrument by spending time with our clients and testing and piloting it 5 years ago. We also work at Wesleyan, where I also teach. And that is with students, and we give, with all the proper protections, we give them under the supervision of quantitative researchers in the, there's something called a Quantitative Analysis Center at Wesleyan, and they look at our outcomes mainly in our criminal justice programs. We also have an ongoing relationship with Yale and the psychiatry department, and they're piloting what's called a citizenship intervention, kind of transforming the people we work with, having them change their self-conception from being clients and recipients of care to active citizens. We work with UConn. We've worked with UConn for 15 years. With UConn, we got a five.
So these are big universities. This is a big deal.
I could go on and on. We got a $5 million grant with UConn in conjunction with the Department of Children and Families. That was 20% a research grant.
So let me ask you this. With the research and with the outcomes, have you ever looked at something and said, let's zig instead of zag? Has anything ever gone away? Or, I mean, what do you do with this stuff?
Right. Absolutely. And that's a great question, because that is the whole purpose. The whole purpose is find out what works and what doesn't. And one of the things with data, we actually, as Lisa said, we probably collect too much data. So one of my things that I'm trying to do is simplify and get meaningful data and things that matter and that don't matter. When you, at the end of the day, we were looking at, in 1980, Ronald Reagan looked at Jimmy Carter in the 1980 debate, and he said, are people better off than they were 4 years ago? And it was Reagan as the great communicator, and that's the core of what we're looking at. Are our clients better off as a result of coming through our programs than they were before? And that comes down to housing, criminal recidivism, substance abuse, all the things that I know this show has been talking about. But to be very specific, we found, for example, that those folks in our halfway houses, which are people getting out of prison and they're doing the end of their sentences in our halfway houses for 3 to 6 months, the whole purpose is to get jobs for them. Some of them get jobs, some of them don't. You can imagine the obstacles. We found that those clients in our programs, when they got jobs, 3 years later, they were 10% less likely to be back in trouble with the law. And now we're looking at who was it that got the jobs, how we can work with folks to augment those services. We also found, interestingly enough, that mental illness, having a mental illness, did not correlate with increased recidivism. Substance abuse did, but not having a mental illness, which might be a surprise to some folks.
That is surprising.
Yep.
Wow. So that's pretty amazing. And, you know, you speak to from going to the halfway house and having employment and how that is, you know, such a step up. Well, of course, you know, you have a purpose. You have a reason. You talk about, you know, citizenship. That's really your mission, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the key word that
you
focus on.
That's in our mission statement.
Yeah. And it's your ultimate goal is for people to feel like they belong. And in order to belong, you know, you want to feel like you're doing something, you're earning the money that you're spending, and you're earning the roof over your house. I mean, I would think if you surveyed, and maybe you have, people out there, do you want everything handed to you, or do you want to go out and make it on your own? I think but there's so many barriers sometimes for people to do that. It's frightening.
Yeah, and you know, when you talk to our clients, and a lot of our work is what we call participatory research, so it's not, you know, we do our own research, but we also work with these major universities in Connecticut. But the crux of it is listening to our clients and having them even at times participating in the research. So it's not like a top-down model where the experts come in, they collect the data, and they split. Mm-hmm. So when you talk to clients, we do a lot of focus groups and so on. They want to work. In fact, we have a miracle worker at this halfway house who's gotten our employment rates in a halfway house up to times 90%,
wow,
which is extraordinary. And I'll tell you, one of the things that he does is he it's very client-centered in the sense of he does an employment assessment, and it's what do you want to do? Because if you put me in the wrong job, and I'm not going to do very well, you know? So he starts with there, and then it's all about linkages to the community, and to the degree that now he's gotten networks of employers who have been very happy with our clients because they tend to show up on time, partially with our support. Actually, we run a halfway house in southeastern Connecticut, and at one point, apparently, the Dunkin' Donuts down the street was primarily staffed by the residents of our halfway house. So in terms of real concrete results, though, I just wanted to get back to that. We wrote, I and colleagues, we actually had to write the grant 4 times. We got rejected 3 times, 3 years in a row. Then we wrote it a 4th time. It was really frustrating because they gave us, this is the Federal Department of Justice, something that George Bush did called the Second Chance Act to help returning offenders that got a lot of publicity and was continued under Obama. So we wrote the grant 3 times, and it's a mentoring grant. So it's to, the whole idea of the grant is to take people that have been through the criminal justice system, who are now stable, been clean in various ways for a long time, and to have them impart the lessons of their experience to people that are just out, right? So we wrote it 3 times. We got written feedback from the feds. Every time I did exactly what they told us to do, we got rejected again. We got really good scores. We got rejected again. So finally, we got it the 4th year. The couple things happened. One is we attached it to a program where we had our own research showing that the program, pre and post, from the time that people come in to the time that people get out, we were reducing their criminal behavior by an actuarial objective measure. So we had our own data. So what happened is we finally got the grant. We got $200,000 a few years ago. We hired 2 men who had been, had one case, very long prison sentences. One of them had actually been in solitary for 15 years.
I got to ask a question.
Yeah.
How did he get out?
His time was finally up, and he was in for a very long time. And
okay, here's the old reporter in me. What did he do?
He committed a murder, and he served his time, and he got out many, many years later. I tell you one thing: murder is actually a very low. I'm not talking about the type of crime, but it's actually a very low recidivism crime. Because most people that commit murder don't commit another murder. It's mm-hmm. usually a crime of passion.
Right.
But in any case, we have these two men. We hired them, and their histories are, you know, literally 30 years in the past, and they're very well vetted. And they did hard time, right? So
I would say so.
Yes, extremely hard time. So they we did a randomized clinical trial. So half the people in the halfway house got the usual services, half of them got the usual services plus these two men providing mentorship. We actually just last week got the final numbers because the grant is over, and we found that the recidivism rates, in other words, the return to prison, were half the rates for those that had the mentors than those who had the usual services in an already pretty good program. And if you dig into the research, what's interesting is that for the first 4 months, the graph is the same. In other words, the recidivism rates are the same. After 4 months, they totally diverge, and that's where we get this separation where it's double for the people that didn't have the peer mentor. And what we're thinking is that these guys who did very hard time and, you know, went through a whole lot, they really talked about compliance, working with parole officers, working AA, NA, Narcotics Anonymous programs, really like compliance, and that it's a tough road ahead of you. Mm-hmm. And so they help people get through that honeymoon period where the results were kind of the same, and you've got a tough road ahead. And that's the kind of knowledge that Lisa or I could not impart. We may know the research, the clinical services, mm-hmm. but we can't do that stuff.
Well, Lisa, and doesn't it point to, you know, like myself in recovery, peer support, you know, with the programs has always been there. Whether it's a phone call or whether it's somebody who's been there, done that with years and years of sobriety that can, you know, give me a reality check after six and a half years.
Exactly.
You know, and I still need that, right? So you know that it's effective because you know that you're hearing from somebody. You know, why do you think people go into the rooms? Because they know that they're surrounded by people who are going through or have been through what they're going through. And that's so important, isn't it?
It is. I think for any of us have even gone through, you know, an illness or, you know, a death, etc., you know, relating to someone who's walked that path and really understands and having that support and guidance, it to me is really key. And I think that this has been a really eye-opening experience for us at the agency, and we want to continue to do this work. But let me just be clear that we do work with folks that are consumers, right? So, you know, I'm sure people are listening and thinking, oh, that's, how do you have someone that, you know, committed that type of a crime and how are they a role model? But obviously, you know, these folks that we're talking about have really gone through their own internal workings of their soul and who they are, and have really made significant changes in their life to be, in fact, a role model to other people. And what they have given back is to show that they're ready to be citizens again in Connecticut, and, you know, are really changed their lives and are making an effective impact on those that need help. So I think that, you know, that's great. And we also see that with the clients that have left and are, you know, citizens in the community that come back to the program in which they stayed, and that they're working with our current clients and they're
giving back
and an amazing role model. I think just when you think, you know, you want to give up, you know, you talk to someone who's walked that path that you have, and they give you that little extra something and they help you guide, you know, lead the way. And I think that that's really effective.
So how do you convince employers and people to, you know, give these folks a second chance?
Right. And the grant that we got, the federal grant that I talked about, was called the Second Chance Act.
Right.
It's all about giving people second chances. When I've been involved in employment around people, not just for people with criminal offenses, but people that have, you know, 10 years missing in their, you know, resume and whatnot, The main policy is honesty, and just to explain exactly, you know, maybe not every detail, but, you know, that typically in life is a good strategy. But we found, I worked with an excellent employment specialist who worked in a halfway house, and she did a couple things that were interesting. The main one was be honest about your history, you know, put it up front, and almost in a way say, I learned from it. This is what, in a concrete way, this is how I am now, you know, almost talk about what you've, you know, try and turn it into a positive in an honest and straightforward way. The other thing that she did she said, write thank you notes. And
handwritten.
Can
you imagine?
Maybe not handwritten anymore.
No,
I'm not
think
sure.
They should be handwritten. I think that's a dying thing.
It is.
Right.
I love it when I get a little handwritten thank you note.
Right. And then the other thing that she would do, and I actually saw her do this, is when people went out the door to go, you know, a lot of times it is fast food or restaurant jobs, she would actually do a role play interview with
yes.
people
mm-hmm.
the moment they were going out the mm-hmm. door. And so it was fresh in their heads, and she'd ask those hard questions, the felony question and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So our guy in New Haven at this large halfway house has been enormously successful. And when we haven't had excellent employment specialists, that employment rate goes way, way down. Mm-hmm. So it's all about the networking and the straightforwardness.
And I think it's the knowledge, right, that these people pass along, because it's an intimidating process. Whether you've been incarcerated or not, you know, going out for a job application or job interview can be very intimidating to the average person, right? So to have those tools and that preparation and that role playing and looking the part and playing the part. And I got to go back to this guy working at my house, man. He's there early. He works late. I mean, just his compassion and commitment is like none other. And, you know, I tell my folks all the time, when people come in here for an interview, I say, you know what? I want people skills and common sense, you know, and that's what I'm looking for. I think it's great that you went to this university. I really don't care about your jobs. I want to know about your extracurricular activities. And are you a people person? I mean, do you get it?
Right. And we look for people, like when we were doing interviews for this peer mentor program, we look for people, same thing. We look for honesty and honest reckoning as to what they've done, and a sense that they've moved beyond that, that they've taken ownership of what they've done. And a lot of it is when they were very young and there were all kinds of, you know, difficult mm-hmm. circumstances. About half of the crimes in the United States are committed when people are actually high. And drunk. It's so we think of we know intuitively the relationship between you know, substance abuse and criminal, you know, that it's to get the money for drugs, but actually about half of the crimes are actually committed when people are high and drunk. So,
well, you know, and that's another reason why organizations like The Connection are so important, because one thing leads to another. So you almost need this umbrella over you, right? Because, and everybody's different. Everybody's individualized. It's not a cookie cutter approach. So to your point, Charles, it might have been because of a substance abuse problem, which then needs to be addressed. It might be because of a mental health issue, which then, did you see how I said mental health?
I'm impressed.
Mental health issue, that which then seems to, needs to be addressed. So it's like anything else in life. It's a continuum of care. You know, you don't just go into a nursing home at the end. You start in assisted living and you graduate yourself through the process, which is great.
And from a taxpayer perspective, this grant that we were wrapping up, we just found the data. We save the taxpayers of the United States a lot of money with this reduced recidivism. So it's about, the Department of Corrections says that it's about $60,000 a year to have someone in prison. The people in this program is particularly, in this halfway house program, particularly needy with medical, psychiatric needs. So I would say conservatively $100,000 to keep them incarcerated for a year. When we halved the recidivism rate for this $200,000 grant, We haven't calculated the dollar figures, but I can tell you it's well over $1 million. That's probably extremely conservative. So from a dollars and cents points of view, we took people that had difficulties. They're turning themselves into productive citizens, and they are saving. They're promoting public safety. Which is, you know, kind of a weird concept in a way. Someone who's been there is promoting public safety. But what we found, and it's not just us, is that a lot of our clients are more likely, the clinical services are critical. But in terms of reaching the kind of sometimes hard to reach people, they often hear it much better from someone who has been down that road. One of these guys went to the supermarket with one of the people that had just gotten out of prison. And in the commissary in prison, there's like two types of cookies, right? So they're in Stop and Shop, and there's like 300 kinds of cookies. And he actually couldn't handle it, like mentally. It was like absolutely overwhelming. And so he was with one of our mentors, because he took him shopping. And he's like, same thing happened to me.
Wow. If I would have been there, I would have said Oreo double stuff. That's the only thing you need to know.
Just one choice.
Okay. Now they got triple stuff, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, too much.
Yes. So, Charles Barber, this was an interesting conversation, and we're going to continue to speak with you about other programs and other research as well. But you are the director of the Connection Institute for Innovative Practice. So for those folks out there saying that, you know, money's just being thrown at this problem and we don't even know if it works, you know that it works. And you're doing the research and you've got the numbers. So we want to also encourage people to go to the website as well if you want more information on any of the Connection programs. And that is The Connection Inc. All one word, theconnectioninc.org. Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, it's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Yeah. I'm so grateful for this program and for Charlie Barber to be here today to talk about the great work that he's doing at The Connection, and how I just want folks to know how grateful I am to have this amazing, brilliant staff on board to do this really hard work. So thank you, Charlie, for being here. And thank you, Anne.
Yes, it's always fun. Today. And, you know, Charlie, you know, continued success.
Thank you.
And, you know, grant writing is challenging. You know, it's everybody, you're looking for anything you can do to fund programs at work, because I'll say this, I'll editorialize a little bit, because here in the state of Connecticut, we all know what the situation is. You know, the legislative session and special session, and, you know, programs are being cut, and when programs are cut, the people don't get the services that they need, and we all pay the price. Mm-hmm. Whether you're in one of these programs or not, or whether you're suffering from, you know, addiction or mental health issues, I mean, we are all part of the same society, so if these people don't get the services that they need, it impacts all of our lives, folks. So that's what we need to remember. But this has been a great conversation, and I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening to this edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.